This episode is brought to you by Good Life Nutrition, developed by athletes like you. Whether you are looking for race day nutrition, daily electrolytes, or your daily protein, Good Life Nutrition has you covered. Built on science and backed by common sense, it's why professional athletes like Ben Canute, Jason West, and many others have made the switch. Enjoy 25% off your first order by using promo code SLOWTWITCH. Just go to fuelyourgoodlife.com and use promo code SLOWTWITCH.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slow Twitch podcast. My name is Kevin McKinnon. I'm a senior editor at Slow Twitch. We're here today with Ben Snyder McGrath, and we've also got some special guests. We've got Andy Schurting and Kathleen Walker, the husband and wife team behind New England Endurance Events. Hey, Andy and Kathleen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Well, obviously, we're going to talk about some of the events that you put on throughout the year. But before we get rolling on that, could you tell us a little bit about how you got into putting on multi-sport events and your athletic backgrounds, maybe?
Sure. We're both veteran triathletes, and we have gotten into some other areas. Like currently, we're huge swim-run fans. I would say it was in the early 2000s. Since we assisted the race director of a Olympic distance race in the Boston area called the Cranberry Triathlon, and did that for a number of years, and we enjoyed it. I think around 2012-2013, Kathleen was thinking of a way of helping a charity in our community. It's a camp for seriously ill children and their families. And she thought, I'll probably let her tell the story, but she thought, well, why not have a triathlon race and raise money for that? And it was a big success, still ongoing here.
And that's the gut check. It's now an adventure triathlon.
So, yes.
Gut check adventure triathlon.
Been around for 14 years. But I think a year or so after that, she got a call from a race director saying, hey, will you take over my race? And then the next year was another race. And then the next year was three races. And somehow we've gotten up to eight races now. And we have a little company. It's not our only job, but eight races a year on the side as a second company is keeps us busy.
I guess. So what do you do when you're not training for swim run events and putting on triathlons? I would think that that would keep you more than enough busy, but it sounds like you have something else on the go too.
Oh, we have a marketing communications firm that we've had for decades. It was our company that we ran before we got into this second company, and it still continues, and that keeps us busy. And we're still athletically involved, but we can't race in the summer anymore, so we go to warmer climates to race in the winter.
Okay. Have you made any ventures this winter so far?
Well, we haven't done one yet, but we're going to go to St. Martin to do a triathlon next month. So, and then a swim run race in the spring that we have not yet identified for this year.
Right. We usually try to do one swim run during the year and go somewhere warm. Water tends to be quite cold for those.
Or a Disney marathon or something like that.
And did you guys, so you transitioned into adventure racing. Is that because your interests took you there? Did you start doing adventure races and think, let's put one on?
You want me to answer that?
Sure.
So I think adventure races are fun. It's, you know, we love triathlon. Obviously, that's, you know, that was our first endurance sport. But the doing something that's a little bit different, not having a central transition area, really mixes things up a little bit. And, you know, as veteran triathletes, sometimes it's like, okay, all right, I did that race. All right, what's next? And so with the adventure triathlons, it gives you a chance to think a little bit differently about what you're doing, how you're training, the sport itself. So it's a lot of fun to be able to direct and produce, and great for the athletes also.
So one of the events that we've already talked about a little bit on Slow Twitch, the Sea to Summit race, that kind of feels like it fits into both of your passions. One, the triathlon, and now almost, I think, I'm trying to remember how Andy described it, almost as an adventure triathlon. Where can you talk a little bit about how you got involved with that and just about that event?
Well, I think we may be the first to have used the phrase adventure triathlon in describing some of our events. Sea to Summit came along. We did not start the race. It was started in the 1990s by a group of people. It was almost reminds you of the Ironman story in Hawaii, where there's a bunch of guys at a bar who are talking about, like, hey, what if we combine this and combine that and get a race out of it? And they did. It involved a 2-mile kayak off the main coast, followed by a nearly 100-mile bike ride to the foot of Mount Washington, which is the 6,200 feet. It's the tallest building in the the tallest mountain in the Northeast, and it's also just due to its location, the weather can be very gnarly out there. So they did that in the 1990s and the early 2000s, and I believe it was 2013, 2014, when it transitioned to a swim bike run under the former race director, Jeff Donatello. And in 2018, we were asked to take over the race, and we have. But it's a somewhat self-supported race, although we're all over the place, whether it be at the swim venue, the bike venue, the run venue, and we're putting all the permitting together and things along those lines. Each racer has a support person, and they do not have to follow a set course to get to the foot of Mount Washington. And then they got to scramble their way up to the finish at the summit.
Yeah, it's so funny because you sort of talk about those distances, right? Like I think it's 1.2-mile swim, 95-mile bike, 93 to 95 miles. And then the run is roughly 5 miles. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think it's 5.2 miles, but it's straight up. I think they climb 1,000 vertical feet for every mile on their way up to the summit. And at times you're on all fours.
Right. So run is kind of a misnomer. It's yeah. More of a hike, sometimes a cry. But, eventually they make it to the top.
Yeah. We saw one person.
And there's a ton of climbing towards the end of the bike as well, I believe.
Yes. Yes, those last 9 miles are just uphill. It's pretty pretty tough to watch, let alone ride it. So, they get to the top. They get to T2, which is at Wildcat Mountain parking lot, which is right by the entrance to the trails for the mountain. And they're exhausted. You know, they spent the first 90 miles are like, oh yeah, I got this. No problem. I'm trained. And they get to that last part and they're gasping. But, you know, it's amazing. I think that's where, you know, the difference in athletic abilities and training really shows up is in the last part of the bike. You know, that's where things are made, you know.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys have just painted this picture of such an easy going day and like the easiest triathlon you could ever pick.
Right.
Well, many of the participants, they almost seem like they're chiseled out of granite, where we're talking about some very accomplished racers. We've had pros at the race and some have done well. Some have been kicked in the butt. We had a fellow who was a 4-time Olympian in cross country skiing. He was the only participant ever that we saw sprint up the hill to the summit, Chris Freeman. We see the full range, and we do have qualifying standards for the race so that we're not worried, because we have staff out in the mountain. They have to get out before dark. And so all the participants get a medical check before they head up the mountain. There's a number of precautions we take because The weather can change quickly atop Mount Washington, and we can suddenly have, it could be 70 degrees and sunny at the base and be 35 degrees and blowing 45 at the summit. So,
yeah, and when I was researching this, it made me think of Kevin and I were lucky enough to go to Norway in the summer, last summer, and experience the Norseman triathlon. And this just felt like that. Like, it feels like, I mean, on your website, you say, I believe on your website, it's a bucket list race for so many people. Mm-hmm. And I can see why. And it feels like, you know, Norseman is like a huge trip, huge expense and everything. This is like same deal on, if you're American, like home soil kind of. But obviously, it's not for the faint of heart. And like you said, you have to qualify, or there are the standards you have to meet. So what are the ways people get into the race?
Well, they have to complete either an Ironman or a half Ironman or something similar. We're not just holding it to people who have participated in an Ironman race. But around the 140.3 distances. But okay. We do allow athletes in who have shown, you know, it's like I've done the Leadville on the bike and I've ran across California on a run. Okay. You know, they know what a hard day is like. And so we'll let those accomplished athletes into the race as well. But yeah, if someone's in an Ironman, they have to be in the upper half of their age group as far as their finish, and they need to have finish times. Well, for the Ironman, it's about 14 hours or 6.5 hours for 70.3. So it's really just to make sure that the people we have doing this difficult day, especially being on the mountain, are kind of used to the pace and the rhythm and the nutritional demands and everything else that a tough day requires.
Mm-hmm. And so, the registration is open for that race, and it's on July 25th, correct?
It is. It's mostly full at this point. We do have some slots left. Some people get injured and ask to push off till next year. And so we kind of stay aware with that. But I think the first year we took over, it did not sell out, but it has sold out every year since. Even including 2020, the COVID year, where we enacted social distancing, which was easy to do when you have such a long distance race. And we enacted all sorts of protocols, and we were able to have a race that year, New Hampshire being Maine and New Hampshire both being states which were not as restrictive with the regulations. Mm.
And that number is 100, right? That's what you typically cap things out at for Sea to Summit?
Yes, we did go past 100 for a couple of years, and we just found logistically it was difficult on the staff. We also wanted to be careful on the roads, reinforce the Ironman level or long distance level drafting of 12 meters. I kind of wish we maybe would go with the pro standard of 20 meters just to keep people apart on the way out there. I think we want to probably keep it under 100 from now on.
Okay. Have you guys seen sort of a demand for events like this? You know, as Ben was talking about, we were at Norseman and, again, a small field that's capped at 250, and you guys cap your event at 100. You know, do you see an attraction or like people being drawn to these events as opposed to, you know, they've gone and done their Ironman, their 70.3s, and now they're looking for something different?
I think that you're right. That's exactly it. Triathlon, your standard triathlon is fun and that's great and challenging, but people are looking for something else. You know, we have two other, you know, more adventure triathlons, and one in Stratton Mountain and one here on the Cape. And, you know, they bring in those people that are looking for something a little different. They're in shape, they've done their training, but they don't want to do just that standard, you know, run-of-the-mill triathlon. And so I think that it's really hits a spot, particularly for those athletes that have, you know, have been doing Ironman and they're like, all right, I've done that, you know, and that's great. Everything is really supported. That's, you know, terrific. But, you know, what happens when I'm left to my own devices and I have to get from point A to a long distance point B? Can I do that? How can I involve my family or friends in this besides them just standing around waiting for me to go past, you know? So it's really, you know, it's a community effort for each athlete. And I think that's what I find really neat about this race is that involvement that, you know, you hope you have a good relationship with that person that's portering you, whether it be a spouse or a friend, because they could make or break your race. And usually they don't break the race, they make the race. So, you know, it really brings people together. And, you know, when I talk to the other two athletes, Andy's at the top of the mountain as they finish and I'm down at T2 and then they end up coming back down after they finish. And what I hear most is how much this race, you know, finishing this race has changed their lives in some way, you know, that they've realize their potential that they didn't even know that they could, you know, that they could do when they were going into the race and training for it. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I got it. And then race day happened and they were really pushed to their limits and they found that they could make that happen. So it's been really, really amazing to be able to watch the transformation that athletes have made as they've completed the race.
And do you kind of feel like when I interviewed Andy for the story that we wrote earlier, he kind of talked about this community, and we certainly felt that in Norseman. You know, do you see yourselves maybe more of a sense of camaraderie out on the course than you maybe see at other events when you're looking at an event like the Sea to Summit?
Well, I think most endurance races are wonderful in their own different ways. You know, I've crossed the Ironman finish line and felt emotional. And we see a lot of emotion at Sea to Summit and also our other adventure triathlons. And our swim run race particularly has a usual characteristic of such a close knit. But with Sea to Summit, it's really something to talk to athletes who are still best friends with someone they met as they raced together or as they hiked together up the mountain 10 years ago, or families of athletes who now get together and have vacations together and they met at the Sea to Summit, you know, supporting their loved ones out on the course.
And so moving on, you mentioned gut check events. So those are in Cape Cod and, as you said, Stratton Mountain in Vermont. So August 15th, September 19th. And can you tell us, at the start of the recording, you said that the gut check, I believe, did it start as a regular triathlon and then it turned into what it is today, an adventure race?
So the gut check that's here on the Cape started off as a triathlon and duathlon. And it was, I think that the first few years, it was like the first week in May. Now, I don't know how much time you spend on the Cape, but the first week in May is not the warmest time to get in the water here. So, so we shifted to the fall. And then after a few years of that, we're like, well, that's fun, you know, and it was a tough sprint, you know, and everyone loved that, but we kind of wanted to mix it up a little bit. So that's where the adventure triathlon came to be. And for that race on the Cape and then the Stratton Mountain race, the adventure triathlon, the adventure part of it is that there is no set course. There's only checkpoints and you don't know what the course or what the checkpoints are until a few minutes before the race. And then we hand you a laminated map that has exactly where you need to go on there. And then good luck. So everyone makes it back eventually. Oh, they all finish. We've only had to hunt down a couple people over the years we've done this. And everyone finishes with a smile, which is really neat because sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, wow, I got way off course. But they laugh about it because it's fun. Like the idea is to kind of celebrate your, you know, your ability to be out and have a great time while, you know, while being fit. you know.
Kathleen and I are both can be very much type A's, and we will approach often a triathlon with that attitude. But we really do enjoy also doing races, and often when we race in the winter, we'll just pick maybe a destination that is going to be enjoyable and fun and something different. So I think of our 8 races, 4 of them fit that category of something unique. And they're not for everybody. You know, some people would prefer to just know that they've got this course, they've got the volunteers in every corner, they've got the rigid fencing, they've got the
signs, directional signs are helpful. Yeah.
The carpeted transition area. You know, this is a little bit more out of the box, I guess.
It is, right. Yeah. That's what makes it so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
The marketing company you guys have, I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. Like, you're selling an event that people are exhausted before they even start the run, just getting off the bike. And then, we usually find people by the end of the day.
We've always found them. We'll correct that, Kevin. We give them a whistle. So we say, if you get really lost, just start blowing your whistle. But no one's had to. So I think that's a plus. Yeah.
So I guess part of, like, it sounds to me like you guys are putting on events that you would want to do. Is that, have I got things right there?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You know, we love to do endurance races, and we've been doing them for a really long time. And so if we're feeling like, hey, it'd be nice to kind of mix things up a little bit, you know, we found that other people are saying, yeah, me too.
And we love traditional triathlons, and we still do. But I think what we like is getting the word out to our athlete community that, you know, maybe at the end of the season, instead of doing one more sprint or Olympic distance race to cap off the season, maybe do something different. That is, the pacing's different. You know, the way you think as you're racing is different, and it's and just have some fun. As a matter of fact, our gut check races, you can race it as a solo competitor, or you can form a team of 2 or 3 or 4.
Okay.
You know, it's wonderful to see out there a group of, let's just say, nurses or school teachers or firefighters who have ganged together and say, hey, let's do this. It'll be a fun morning. And, you know, they're moderately fit, perhaps, but that's enough to get them through it.
It seems like this is all a wonderful way to get people to do more events, right? Like, because, you know, one of the issues we've had up here in Canada is, as the Ironman world just exploded, people got to the point, you know, they used to do 8 or 10 events in a season, and then they got very focused, got my Ironman race, and I'm going to do 170.3 or half to prepare for that, and that's all the racing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
It seems like this is a wonderful way, and I guess my long way to getting to the question, do you have a lot of people who will do, of your 8 events, 3 or 4 of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that I'm trying to think if we have someone that's done all 7, and we might be off with that one, but I know that we have some athletes that have done 6 of the 7 or 5 of the 7, not uncommon at all. So because it's something different, you know, yeah, you've got some standard, you know, triathlons in there, but then you've got things that mix it up a little bit. And so, you know, they come back, you know, they come back for each race, and year after year, we have athletes that have been with us since 2000. I guess we started that check in 2014. So we've had athletes who have been with us ever since.
So I do want to get to the swim run event, but before I get to that, I just want to get my head around the different events. So you've got Cedar Summit, you've got a couple of gut check events. Are there others, like more closer to a standard triathlon, that we would think of with, you know, signs and getting your race course handed to you a couple of minutes before you start?
Yeah, for the type of triathlon that we all recognize and love, we have 4 of them. And
okay.
They are all located on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. We have 2 in June. They both have sprint distance. One of them has an Olympic distance option. We have 1 in July, which is a sprint race. And we have one in September, both sprint and Olympic. And those are standard triathlons. Of course, we try to make them as enjoyable an experience as possible, like all race directors. But we're following the same formula that you would see at triathlons all around the world.
Right. And actually, one of those is, it's the same venue and same race in June as it is in September. And that's the Hyannis Triathlon, which is one of the oldest triathlons in the U.S. And I don't mean just like one of, as in a dozen. I mean, between the Hyannis and San Diego. The question is, which one came first?
And I think San Diego came first. I'm not going to get in that argument with the people there, but it does go back to the early 80s.
And sadly, I'm going to throw my age under the bus here. My first full distance race was the Bud Light Endurance on Cape Cod.
Yeah.
Way back when, and Scott Molina won that year. Mark Serpinot was second. I came third in that event. And way back when, I feel like it was 85 or 86. You guys have had some long running events there. And then the Hyannis Marathon was my one and only marathon that I ever ran. Yeah. So I'm all too familiar with all the action that was going on in the 80s in Cape Cod.
Yeah. And, you know, to say something about triathletes in the 80s, that race that you did, the town never let it happen again because the post-race party was too raucous.
Well, the thing that was, I always remember with that, I can't remember his name, unfortunately. There was a 72-year-old who did the race. And so all of the pros had come up and we were all just limping up onto the stage, and he just bounced up and grabbed the mic and said, "I don't know what's wrong with those guys. I was out for twice as long and they can't move and I'm doing just fine." So that just always sort of is one of the things I've always remembered with that event. And Colleen Cannon always talks about the first year they ran the event. There was supposed to be aid stations, but didn't quite happen. And she started during the run, she was knocking on doors and asking people for water and ended up winning the race still. So it was kind of the grassroots of the sport way back when.
Back when there was nudity in the transition area and everything.
Absolutely. So my wife still talks about that being one of her favorite races. She just parked herself next to the pro men's bike racks and just watched us all come in and get changed right there. Not a tent in sight. So
I'm sure there's more spectators around at that time for that.
Yeah. So I guess you've got those events and then the swim run event. You were talking about not being crazy about colder water, but that runs in October, right? So you guys won't swim in cold water, but you put everyone else in cold water. How does that work?
It's actually not cold, Kevin. So here's a secret about the Cape Cod ponds. And of course, on the Cape, most of our bodies of water are considered ponds, not lakes, no matter how big they are. So just to clarify that. So the ponds on the Cape, particularly in the outer Cape, which is where the swim run takes place, the water temps are still in the upper 60s, maybe mid 60s if it's been cold, all the way up to October. They're also great early. So when we used to have the Wellfleet Sprint Triathlon, which is another one of our traditional triathlons, it used to also be early in the season. And I would go out the week before to test the water and, you know, check the temperature. And I'd always be like, oh, I don't want to get in. It's going to be cold. And then there'd be some kid going in, you know, wearing like no wetsuit or anything like that. Sure enough, the water would be warm. So the Cape water, at least in the outer Cape for the ponds, tends to get warm quickly and stay warm through mid-October.
We benefit from a climate oddity. If you look at a agricultural zone map of the United States, you'll see the same zone that might be in North Carolina, Delaware, New Jersey creeps up the coast and hits Cape Cod. So it's as warm in the ponds as it would be in the mid-Atlantic states, which would not be true if they were elsewhere in Massachusetts or in New Hampshire or some of the other New England states. So we benefit from that. So we had the swim run race at the last weekend of September this past year, and the race day temperature was around 72, I think.
Yeah.
71 or 72 in most of the ponds.
So, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Plenty of people racing.
And I'm guessing that date, you guys go with those sort of dates just because at that point there's a little bit of a down time in terms of tourism in Cape Cod?
Well, the communities do prefer us to stay outside of July and August. So on the Cape, we do have one event in July, and that's about to be going on for 35 years. And we're allowed to continue to have our August event is in Vermont and doesn't have the same issues. Most of our races are June and September. And sometimes we creep into October, as we will be doing in 2026 for the split run event, which will still be a warm swim run because there's something about swim runners often are racing in 50 something degree temperatures.
This will not be that.
even if we did it in November. Kathleen and I were trained 2 years ago, quite diligently for a swim run event that was in Greece in Thanksgiving weekend. And we were swimming in the ponds here on Cape Cod in November. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel, it felt a little nippy when you got, a little chilly when you got in. But it's an unusual climate situation up here.
And do you guys, do you race swim run events solo, or do you do it as a two-person team?
Yeah, we do it as a team. Andy can pull me along in both.
Kathleen can pull on a tether and let me know in no uncertain terms I'm going in the wrong direction.
In the swim. Yeah.
That's helpful. And so Swim Run Cape Cod is part of My Swim Run, which is a global series, and it has qualifying spots for the Swim Run World Championships. How long has it been part of that organization?
But since our first race, it was actually at the race in Greece that Kathleen and I did together that we met the commissioner of that series, which at that time only had European events. And, you know, it was just a relationship thing where we enjoyed his company, and he asked us to join this swim run championship series. And we said yes. And so our athletes can qualify to go to the championship, which so far has been in Europe, but we're thinking 1 year coming up, it will be in the United States. And so it's nice to be part of that. For one thing, it's 20 or so race directors, and we talk on the Zoom and we share, you know, best practices and learn how to make our races even better. So it's a very nice arrangement.
Can you talk a little bit about how swim run differs from Otillo? That I think a lot of people kind of know about the Otillo event and some of those races. How does swim run differ on that front? Or does it?
I don't think it does. Otillo is, I mean, thank goodness for Otillo in inventing the swim run style of racing and popularizing it internationally as they have. And so it's a terrific series, and we can't say enough good about Otillo.
Yeah.
It was, for us, we had been wanting to do a swim run since, I think, 2017. We did some testing of a test event on it, and the pandemic sort of pushed us aside in being able to hold our first swim run race. And then we were prepared to do it 3 years ago, and a hurricane came across the Cape. And emergency rescue authorities said, no, we have to be available for public emergencies. We can't also have birds on our mind. And then the following year, a nor'easter came along and knocked us out again. It was very unusual. this past year, 2025, was the first swim run Cape Cod. And we were smart enough to now institute a rain date the following day. If that ever happens again, we'll just shift.
Kathleen, what is it that you enjoy about the swim run events, both as a race director and as a participant?
I think as a participant, and I say this a lot because we're in this triathlon community here on the Cape, which is quite active. And, you know, people are like, well, why would I want to do a swim run? So this is one. So you don't realize how natural it is to go from running to swimming back to running and so forth until you've trained to do it. Much different than a triathlon where you keep ending up in the same parking lot every time you do something. With the swim run, you just keep going. So you have your gear on, you swim, you know, you run, you get close to the pond, you start making your transition as you're running, if we're lucky. And, you know, in the water you go and you get to the other side, you get out, you do it all backwards and you start running again and, you know, and off. And so it's really this smooth, natural process. And I really enjoy that a lot. I also really like the swim run community is so nice. I don't know if you've been to any swim runs, but I have not met anyone that has sometimes a triathlon, some of us might have some attitude. You don't get the attitude in swim run, no matter how wonderful or, you know, how accomplished the athletes are. Everyone is just nice and helpful and friendly. Yeah, there's competition, but it's not like elbows out. So I really love that as an athlete. And I think that's part of what I love about race directing it as well, because it's an enjoyable, tiring day. The athletes are so nice. We love bringing in some of our triathlon community into swim run. And so it's really nice for us to be able to find something that we really enjoy and then help others to discover that as well. And I feel like that's what we've done with swim run Cape Cod. I would say at least a third of that field this last year were triathletes. Trying their first swim run. And we do have a shorter distance, which I think is almost sold out right now, but we have a shorter distance to kind of let people get their feet wet, which only has three ponds. And so sometimes that's helpful going from a triathlete where, you know, normally you have one body of water and that's enough of that. With the swim run, sometimes it's a bit intimidating to go from your regular triathlon to 6, 7, 8 ponds. So with the short distance, it kind of gives people a chance to get in. And so it's been really fun to be a part of that. And, you know, usually we have people that will tell us, oh, I've been training for my first swim run. And this is so much fun. And so I love giving people a reason to stay active.
So it's talking to you guys. It's so refreshing to hear. People talk about triathlon hitting a peak in 2014, 2015 in terms of numbers. And then since then, there has been a decline in the number of events. And you guys are the exact opposite. You're sort of building out a bunch of events at a time when everyone else seemed to be putting on fewer and fewer. What do you see as sort of being different about what you're doing? Or do you?
I don't know. I think that we just do what we love.
Kathleen tries really, really hard and her team. So I say that. I tend to say I'm the guy who gets things out of the truck and puts them down. Kathleen and her team are the ones that make all the magic happen.
Okay. So that's not exactly true at all. But we do, like, we really enjoy doing this and I love it. Like, for me, this is like, this kind of fills my heart, you know, to be able to give people a reason to, you know, to get out and stay active and stay fit and meet other people. I mean, you know, there's so much on the Cape. We have a lot of our older population, right? When I say older, I mean, like, for triathlon, that's like 50 plus, right? And yeah. And it's so easy to kind of get into your own little routine and not get out and meet people and socialize. And then that becomes an issue as people get older. And so what we've seen on the Cape is that by having this community, the endurance community, it's not just triathlon, people, they're able to socialize more and their lives are more fulfilling. And if we can be a part of that, then, you know, that's all I can ask for.
But you bring up a good point, Kevin, in that we see over and over again someone entering the sport of triathlon, and maybe they start with a sprint or Olympic. Maybe they go straight to a half or a full, but that's tough training to to in order to be able to do the long distances on a regular basis. And so after sometimes a year, sometimes two or three, they're out of the sport. And what we'd like to do is come up with ways of keeping them in the sport. I used to tell people when my kids were small, I was still able to do sprint triathlons on three and a half hours a week of training and finish in the middle of the pack, maybe a little bit better, because you do not need to be putting in all the hours every day. I mean, it's wonderful if you can, and you do, and we're very respectful of those who do, but it's not necessary to enjoy endurance events. So we work really hard at trying to keep people in the sport.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can lose a third or half of your athletes every year, and you need to replace them.
Yeah. Well, it was 40, 50% of people who do Ironman races are one and done, right? So you're bang on with that one. In terms of, just following up on what you guys were talking about in terms of the population in Cape Cod, are you seeing, USA Triathlon has reported that they've had a huge influx of 25 to 39-year-olds over the last few years. Are you guys seeing some of that with your events?
Yeah, actually we are. This last year, we noticed a real uptick in actually 20-somethings. I should back up a little bit more. Older teens.
Okay.
So, because we have this older population on the Cape for our traditional triathlons, if you are 60 plus, watch out, because you might have, a lot of people that you're competing against. But if you were 20 something, you're getting on the podium. So now that has shifted over to this last year. I noticed a real uptick in the 20 somethings and 30 somethings participating in the sprints and the adventure races, because they can do the adventure race with their friends. And so it's really shifted a bit. And even the teams, I was at a team event for a team in Boston, and I looked around the room and there were like five of us old timers, and everybody else was, 20s, 30-year-old. So it was really nice to see that. Very refreshing.
Yeah. We do break the rules in some areas. Well, our average age of our athlete is 42. We're just about even split 50-50 on male versus female. And that's highly unusual in triathlon or in
yeah.
So that's something we're proud of, and we continue to try to cultivate to do that. I think it seemed during the pandemic years that there was a drift away by a lot of people for a lot of reasons, and we did notice a drop in female athletes at our races. And I think we could understand that. Maybe a lot of them were just trying to keep their households going at that time. And I think younger people, it was indications and data that seemed to show that they were going toward untimed events, color runs, things like that. Or okay. They were going to obstacle course racing or trying some of those things. And, thank goodness for the wonderful high school and college programs and swimming, track, cross country that continue to bring great athletes who graduate at their. I still want to stay in condition, and I'd like to do some racing. Often they fall into triathlon. We're happy to have them.
Yeah.
And so you guys are undoubtedly super busy with 8 races. You got the marketing business as well, your own training. But do you have any other plans or hopes or ideas for other events you'd like to add to your lineup in the coming years?
That's a great question, Ben. We always have something in the back of our minds. So Andy and I's favorite pastime is creating other events. Now, they don't always happen, right? But it's something like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we could, use this, this area. Oh, this is such a beautiful state park, let's say. Oh, what could we do there? But right now, I think Stratton Mountain is our newest race. So we wouldn't want to go too far and to plan beyond that. We want to make sure that that's successful before taking on
the first
else.
Race will be this year, and we want mm-hmm. that to be a terrific race. But yes, there are a half a dozen other adventure triathlons that we have in a file cabinet.
Yeah, we have maps.
Yeah.
I think whereas a lot of race directors are hoping that perhaps their standard triathlon, let's say it's a sprint and Olympic, could grow to maybe have more than 1,000 participants or more than 2,000 participants eventually. Kathleen and I kind of like having these events with a couple hundred racers. It may not be from a business person's standpoint the best way of going, but for us, especially because this is our moonlighting job, it's more enjoyable. We get to know the athletes better, it's more manageable, and it's more enjoyable for us. So no, we're not looking to come up with another Chicago triathlon or triathlon or something like that. We're happy with this kind of little niche that we found.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, this has been a super a fun conversation to have, and so refreshing to hear you guys talk about all that you've been doing. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yes. Thanks, Kevin and Ben. This has been, it's been a lot of fun the last hour. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
So we've been chatting with New England Endurance Events, Andy Schurting and Kathleen Walker. On behalf of Ben Snyder McGrath, I am Kevin McKinnon, and we will sign off for our Slow Twitch podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Good Life Nutrition, developed by athletes like you. Whether you are looking for race day nutrition, daily electrolytes, or your daily protein, Good Life Nutrition has you covered. Built on science and backed by common sense, it's why professional athletes like Ben Canute, Jason West, and many others have made the switch. Enjoy 25% off your first order by using promo code SLOWTWITCH. Just go to fuelyourgoodlife.com and use promo code SLOWTWITCH.